Okay, so why don't we go ahead and call our meeting to order here, get started on time.
What would you like for me to do?
My pleasure.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, we'll go ahead and get started with roll call.
Here.
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 Great. Before we dive in too deep, it's come to our attention that we may need to add something to the agenda related to actions taken by the Trump administration. Do you want to comment on that? Maybe you can help us through the process.
Yes, thank you. Honorable Chair, members of the board, it came to the attention of your APCO, and I think to probably many of you, after the agenda was published, that the Trump administration intends to roll back, veto, whatever you want to call it, California's ability to set its own air quality standards for vehicles. The APCO would like to discuss with you and potentially receive direction on sending a letter into the federal agencies with respect to that. Because it arose, the need to take action arose after the agenda was published, you have the ability by unanimous vote to place the matter on today's agenda for discussion and action if you so choose.
Sure, thank you. So
I'd move, to add that topic to our agenda.
Thank you. Okay, moved and seconded by Parker and seconded by Lopez. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Unanimous. So we will go ahead and add that to our agenda under our regular agenda. So with that having taken place, we'll open it up to public comment on items that are not on the agenda today. Are there any members of the public that would like to say anything whatsoever? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public comment and go into reports. We did not have a budget personnel and nominating committee meeting, so there's no report there. Rich, would you like to offer a report on the advisory committee?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. The advisory committee did meet this past month, and we discussed, they received a presentation on our air monitoring program, our compliance status update results that the board saw earlier the previous month, and also they received a report on our AB 2766 program with respect to what we're beginning to be discussing today.
Okay. Any questions from members of the board? Thank you very much. Comments or referrals from chair or other board members? Anybody wants to share any news for the good of the whole? Got a letter around here.
I'd like to make a request that perhaps we get a presentation in January on the emissions from wine production facilities in Monterey County. I know I've had a lot of questions about that, so I'd love to get some background information on that and see what our current policies are. I know we've got a newer board, so it's great information for us. I think January, after we've gone through harvest and crush, I think that's going to be appropriate.
Excellent referral. Sure. Follow up on that. Anybody else? I just want to draw everybody's attention to a flyer I have in the back. There's a clean energy forum that I'm co-hosting with Congressman Panetta on the 30th. It's a regional event, and there'll be plenty to discuss and to surface. So just want to make that invitation and hope that you'll be able to join. With that, we'll go into our report from our APCA. Rich?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'll start with the most obvious. I don't know if anybody noticed it, but the building has been repainted, and it looks wonderful. I mean, you have to sort of notice it now because it doesn't stick out like a big, bright pumpkin, so it's more muted colors, very similar to the color scheme we have, sans the blue. So it came out really nice. The painter did an excellent job, and we're really happy to see the building be repaired with all the damage and holes and so forth, so we're looking good, and I'm sure the neighbors appreciate it in the neighborhood as well. Just to start off on engineering, I'll We had our first round of meetings with a consultant that's helping us update our records retention schedule. The schedule, along with file naming convention guidelines, will provide consistency needed for transitioning our records to an electronic management system. So we're going to have a laser fiche system that's searchable, and it's going to be hopefully saving a lot of paper and trees in the long run, but more importantly, making it easier for us to find documents. And if we do get any kinds of public records requests, that sort of thing, it should greatly facilitate efficiencies. On August 22nd, our engineering division hosted a workshop for wastewater treatment facilities. And you may recall when we had the discussion about toxics at wastewater treatment facilities, primarily diesel engines at those facilities, can cause unacceptable risk to neighborhoods. So we actually reached out to all the wastewater treatment plants. A lot of water providers as well have these types of systems. And we had over 25 wastewater treatment facility representatives at the meeting, and they were very interested in the work that we're doing on air toxics. So kudos to staff for getting those folks on board and in informing and educating them on our programs. On September 19th, our Inspector Bronwyn Nielsen, she's probably out working hard, will present the annual Monterey County Environmental Compliance Workshop. She'll be talking about this year asbestos, and that is actually a hazardous material, and we hope to get some mileage out of this, because apparently we've been talking about this for a number of years, but a lot of building departments in the city and county really don't understand what asbestos is all about, and demolition and exposure issues. So we'll have some a great opportunity to work with Monterey County Environmental Compliance folks. Planning and air monitoring, phase one of two of the Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program, phase one, which was handed off from Monterey Bay Community Power, is going along really nicely. We've received almost 40 applications right now. We hope to at least double or triple that in the next few months. But it will last the entire year, so that's maybe quadruple. National Drive Electric Day will be held in Santa Cruz on September 14th, and we'll have a community power festival in Monterey on September 21st. Both the festivals will offer ride and drive events to test drive electric vehicles. So we'll have booths there, and we'll be hopefully promoting our Monterey Bay EVIP program, the incentive program, and talk about the benefits of driving electric. And it's really nice. I just should hasten to mention, I did receive a number of inquiries from the public, you know, that electric cars are bad, right, because you have to charge them with electricity that comes from our local power plant. And it was a really nice a few letters to respond to, because the beauty is that we have Monterey Bay Community Power. We're not tracking every electron, but all of the carbon electricity in our jurisdiction is carbon-free. Mm-hmm. So it's mainly hydro, but almost 35% is renewables as well. So we're well on our way to reducing without even doing anything, but the vehicles that are charging up are doing so without carbon. So that's really great, and we'll make sure we let folks know that as well. All right. We're going to have a booth at Clean Energy Forum on September 30th at the Oldemeyer Center in Seaside. District signed a grant agreement this past week for funding agricultural replacement measures for emission reductions, and that's Hose Farmer, in case you wondered why I was saying that. And this will provide $1.2 million for the replacement of tractors and irrigation pumps with cleaner burning engines. We've already got everybody in line, so we don't really have to do much in the way of getting the word out. And then, Anne, you can put up some of the photos, right? Just to show you, finally, it's about a year overdue, but the Envision Solar 2020 solar-powered DC fast charging station is operational at the Caltrans Camp Roberts southbound rest area. So this is really huge. It's game-changing. So this is, talk about carbon-free, this is direct electricity from the sun that will power these units. And you can see they have solar panels that are deployed that catch the sun's rays and can photoconvert into electricity. There's also battery backup at these facilities. So that's a nice view. And we imagine a world where, you know, a lot of real estate's going to be taken up with these things. And you see four here in a row. Two of those are going to be deployed to the other rest stop on the other side of the highway. Sorry? Okay, so I stand corrected, so those will be staying there the way they're deployed. The other thing is we just, we have another contract we're signing with Caltrans to actually allow for trickle charge. They don't have enough power there to power these things independently, but we're going to have some trenching done to remotely power the battery from the grid. So that in cases of an inclement weather and so forth, the batteries can still remain viable and folks can still charge up even though the weather's been bad and maybe the solar activity is not as prominent as on good days.
Rich, through the chair, did you say that these are fast chargers?
Yes.
And these are for regular vehicles as opposed to Tesla?
Yes, but if you have a Tesla, you can use it too as long as you have the adapters. So we're really, really happy. This is, like I said, ground changing. We hope to see a lot more of these deployed throughout the state, if not the country. So we're really excited. And there will be, we're going to be meeting with Caltrans tomorrow and their representatives. They're trying to get together a very prominent ribbon cutting ceremony, and they're trying to get our past governors to attend. And so it should be a pretty nice shindig. So I'll let you guys know if you want to attend as well, because I think that's going to be a really great thing to get behind.
How much of this could be paid for?
So, and Alan's going to correct me, I'm sure, but it's about, I believe, about $1.3 million for the two chargers, or the two charging locations, and then about an additional $150,000 for the trenching and battery trickling activities that we're going to underwrite. But Caltrans reached out to us. They're doing some other improvements for parking and so forth, and wanted to know if we could help out there. And I said, absolutely, because we want to make sure this is a success. And once again, I just can't say it enough, that people are coming, they're going to be coming to Monterey County to see how to do things in the rest of the nation. So this is a great project. And
just make sure we put a sign on it, away from graffiti if possible, okay. That says, you know, paid for or made possible with the support of Monterey County.
Yes, we've got that. That's in the contract. In addition, I should just say that, you know, this is huge for Caltrans, too. Caltrans has not let any kind of vending take place, aside from maybe some of the snack machines, but you can't put a Taco Bell at a rest stop or something like that. So they sort of had to, you know, change some policies and so forth to allow this to occur. But this is also really especially important. If you know the geography, there's not a whole lot between San Luis Obispo and South County. So this is going to fill a gap, and these are fast chargers. And within 10 or 15 minutes, you can get a 100-mile charge. So that's going to allow people to get to Monterey or to get to Santa Maria or wherever they need to go. So,
yeah, there's not a fast charger.
I knew I was going to miss somebody. So hopefully we'll see a lot more of these, and hopefully they prove to be really reliable. And just speaking of charging stations, I wanted to let you know, too, we put in the six charging stations at the Prunedale Shopping Center, and I'm sorry that Judge Phillips isn't here, but that has been going really well. We've tripled the amount of visitors that are charging up at that location since its inception back in, well, since January when we started. We had about 30 chargers charging up in a month, and now we've got over 100 chargers. So people are using it, and that's really good news. We don't want to strand these assets and just have them sort of rusting in the sun. So I think that concludes my, yes.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the board. I want to take this opportunity to introduce Deputy County Counsel Brian Briggs, who's in the front row here. He's my backup for this assignment, and I wanted him to come to a full commission meeting. He was here last month, but only for the committee meeting. So you may see his face occasionally if I have a conflict or can't be here for any reason.
Well, to that, congratulations on your intimate appointment as County Counsel.
Acting County Counsel.
Acting.
I do intend to keep this assignment because I think it's important, so I will continue to see my face.
He's going to be so cool. Questions for Rich? Yeah, go ahead, Director Parker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The searchable database thing that we're launching, is that going to also be available for people who are accessing the website who might be looking for a document or a something-something that they also can take advantage of the searchable?
That is certainly the goal. We are going to start off with rather modest goals, and that's to have it work in-house before we deploy it out. And the same thing goes for we have another database system which is going to be managing our permitting system. So that we also hope to have the public that could search our database for permits, and they wouldn't even have to file a PRA or a FOIA. They could just go to our website and hopefully be redacted. And then also online applications for permits and that sort of thing as well. So we hope to be a full service shop online later rather than sooner. We hope to have that deployed in-house. And if I'm speaking out of turn,
once that is available to the public, it should save staff time because people won't have to be calling and asking or submitting a public record.
Exactly, and the biggest hurdle is to digitize it. So once it's digitized, it can be made available online. It's just we're going to have to put some policies and practices in place to make sure that we're not giving away incorrect or confidential information.
Maybe just one point. Rich, if it's possible to share any of the announcements or flyers for the event this weekend that's taking place in Monterey or the workshop on the 19th, please pass those on to the directors. Hey, if we can get there, we can support, promote, and we will. That's great. Okay, any other questions? Okay, so seeing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. Are there any members of the board that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Any members of the public that would like to pull an item from the consent agenda? Okay. Seeing none, is there a motion?
Move consent.
Okay. So moved and seconded?
Second.
Okay, moved by Director Alejo, seconded by Rolls. Great. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. So moving on to the regular agenda, we'll start with the item we added. Rich?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as many of you probably have already heard, the Trump administration announced yesterday to the Automobile Dealers Association that they were going to rescind California's authority to invoke a waiver under the Clean Air Act to set its own emission standards for greenhouse gases on its light-duty vehicles. And, you know, there's a number of op-ed pieces I would turn you to, two of them written by former Governor Schwarzenegger that really address this quite nicely, and I didn't print them up. It's political, but the main issue is states' rights. California is really pretty upset at this, and so there's going to be a pretty big fight over this. What this means is that although it does primarily revolve around GHGs, which the Supreme Court said is a pollutant under the Clean Air Act, it seems that there's an about-face at the administration, and they want to have one standard that applies to all of the country, and that's a lesser standard for the greenhouse gases. And when I say greenhouse gases, it's mileage. There's no way to really reduce greenhouse gases without impacting mileage. This is the corporate average fuel economy standard. And so what we're going to see is the administration's rationale And it's sort of embarrassing to try to explain this because it doesn't really make too much sense to most air quality professionals anyways. But the rationale is that if car manufacturers do not have to make reliable and good gas mileage vehicles at standards that, for instance, California has set, then the price of the vehicles will come down, and then more people will be able to buy vehicles, and then they're going to be safer as a result. So traffic deaths should go down. So it's going from air quality to traffic deaths, and that's why this is a safe rule. And so it really doesn't make too much sense. I really don't think that automobile prices are going to come down that much. But it also gives sort of a kick to the groin to the EV industry here in California, too, which is sort of leading the nation. So it's for those reasons, it really doesn't make any sense. And the states' right issue is really a major problem. Even red states are concerned that the administration is operating in this manner. So with that, I would entertain that you authorize me to write a letter of opposition to the administration expressing our dissatisfaction and basically siding with the state of California and their rationale. And I'm sure you'll be seeing tons of op-ed pieces, and I'm sure Mary Nichols, the director of the California Air Resources Board, is going to be also discussing this issue, and probably has already had a press conference that I haven't seen. Speaking of which, if you want to stick around, the news media must be a slow day, but they will probably be here after the board meeting. They want to interview and get air quality sort of perspective on what's happening and what that means for California. So this is sort of a difficult and troubling time. It's amazing that we were able to get a waiver initially and then later on for greenhouse gases. This doesn't directly affect some of the smog-forming compounds and emissions requirements, such as NOx and VOCs, however, and hydrocarbons. However, vehicle mileage, as you increase your vehicle mileage, all pollutants go down, not just greenhouse gases. So the vehicles will be getting cleaner, for the most part, under California's regulations. And I should also add that there are 14 states that are currently using California's regulations. They've adopted those standards. And it's very difficult to buy a non-California certified vehicle in this country. So the industry wants certainty, so much so that BMW, Ford, Volkswagen, and one more manufacturer, Toyota, have actually signed an agreement with California Air Resources Board to actually meet the mileage standards that were originally intended under California law. And the reason for this is a number of different reasons, but number one, they want certainty. If a new administration is elected in the future, they'll probably go back, and so that's not good. They're looking at the 20-year view, so that's why I say that cars aren't probably going to get cheaper in the short term. In addition, as other countries throughout the world are addressing climate change issues, the mileages are going to increase for those vehicles, and the fleets are changing also towards electric vehicles. And so it puts them at a competitive, U.S. companies at a competitive disadvantage if they're not keeping up with the rest of the world. For those reasons alone, it just doesn't make too much sense. I think the administration also stated that in terms of tons of pollutants avoided as a result, they said it's not going to be that much. I haven't looked at the math to say whether or not that's correct. But one thing's for certain is that we are not going to be holding the car companies to a higher standard, so the technology is not going to be forced to meet that standard. And we know that there are many technologies out there, and EV is just one of those. So this is really troubling, and I think there's going to be a lot of blowback from a number of, not just the 14 states, but a number of states across the country over this.
Thanks, Rich. Yeah, it's an emergency item. We added it to the agenda. We'll need a motion in a second, but are there any questions at this point for Rich on this? Yeah.
I don't have a question as much as what I think should be additional direction that it would be useful for you to also write an opinion piece for our regional papers on this as well, beyond just the letter the administrations are going to ignore. But I think that it's another opportunity to inform the public here about what the Air Resource Board does and this is one of the things that we do.
Yeah, I like that idea and I'm happy to answer you on this. Any other questions? Why don't we take it to the public? Any members of the public wishing to comment or question on this? Seeing none, we're looking for a motion to direct the ACCO to author a letter to the administration. Okay, there was a motion and then, sorry, who made the motion?
Aleva.
Okay, so, and a second. We'll get a letter or an op-ed written as well. Okay, so the motion is to direct the APCO to write a letter and get an op-ed together. Excellent. All right. And we got the second from Director Parker, so thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, it passes unanimously. Great. So then we'll go to our regular agenda and, well, we've got our AB 2766 Motor Vehicle Emissions Grant Program.
I'm going to turn this over to Alan to go through the... you saw this last month, so this is just sort of firming up the details.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Again, the time of year, we call it Christmas in September. But I think what's important to note that the way that these projects have come to to staff, the intent is so focused on direct emission reduction that we really, really applaud the agencies that do apply. I think Richard mentioned this last month, there was a lot of fluff in years past, but these are all seriously good projects. Weighing and evaluating them with the criteria that we use is always pretty much cemented in. And then the rest, of course, is up to the discretion of the board. And so just as a real quick recap, the one thing that stays pretty much static all throughout this allocation is percentage based on population. We haven't had any major population bursts in either of the three counties, and so that's typically where the numbers lay. What's really cool, though, is what we've done with the Clean Vehicle Program. We still have maintained the public agency EV voucher replacement, but with the advent of the Monterey Bay EV Incentive Program, collaborating with the good folks at Monterey Bay Community Power, we really feel like we're really getting the word out, and the numbers of EVs are just going to go up, which you're right. Zero emission is always good. So looking at the anticipated level of funding, this year we had a pretty good size basket, over $2 million. And so with the population distribution, the allocations are pretty large, especially for Monterey County. So the total funding level, you can see with the EVIP program plus the direct emission reduction project, is almost $2.5 million. So I put in the packet last month, and you have it in front of you. These were all of the emission reduction projects that came to the table. There were a total of 11. One of them was a public agency EV voucher replacement program request, and the rest were direct emission reduction projects, all fixed assets. So you can see that the funding requests are quite large, are well over $3 million, because we allow fixed asset projects to request $400K per project, that bumps that number pretty large. And these projects are expensive projects. And so once again, I want to defer to the methodology that we use. It comes straight out of ARB. These are emission factors that come out of MFAC. This was the most recent table, and as I mentioned last month, we have the inventory and the fleet that's within the three counties gets better and better every year with newer cars. The emission levels get tighter and tighter, so these calculations get they just get tighter, and they're very hard to compete when you're talking about a roundabout project versus a vehicle replacement project. And so the numbers bear out in terms of total annual emission reduction, as well as the cost effectiveness value, which is expressed in dollars of per ton of pollutant reduced. Or you can break it down dollars per pound of pollutant reduce, it makes it look better, but the facts speak for themselves. So by county, this is where everything's stacked up in terms of cost effectiveness and the number of, or the annual tons of emission reduced. And so I know it's kind of an eye chart there, but you have in front of you the staff recommendation, which we brought to management and management approved These projects are all solid projects, and going forward, we hope that the board agrees with the staff recommendation as well. And you can see that we spent all the money. There's nothing left, which is good. And with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions on any of the projects that are before you, as is recommended.
Thank you, Alan. Any questions? We'll go ahead and take it to the public. Any public comment on this item? Okay. So we're ready for a motion on the adoption of the resolution making the allocation.
I would just actually briefly add that some of us have been on the board long enough to remember when these were long, drawn-out fights between jurisdictions and such, and Alan, you've done an outstanding job making this about what it's supposed to be about, which is the right thing and not just a political thing. And as you can tell by the agreement here already on the board, that says a lot. These are all good projects. You've done a great job behind the scenes. I want to congratulate you on that. I'll move the recommended action.
Okay. Moved by Director Friend, seconded by Director Parker. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All opposed, same sign. Okay, motion carries. We'll go on to Rich for a letter on AB 1714.
Okay, so there's some, I guess it's all good news on this. There is no need at this time to write a letter. The session's over, but on the other hand, this is now a two-year bill. So it will come back up. And what we've seen is over the past few years, there have been numerous attempts to run a bill that basically take the wine industry out from regulation from air quality standards. And we have, I just want you to know, and we will demonstrate this in January when we talk about the impacts of the wine industry, we do not regulate all wineries. Most wineries, I think it's 1.2 million gallons. So if you make 1.2 million gallons, then you're under our regulation. If you're making less, you're not. So we're talking boutique wineries. And as I've said in the past, if you look at some of the wineries we regulate, they look like oil refineries from the air. They're huge tanks and piping systems. And sort of like what occurs at an oil refinery, there's many avenues for ethanol, which is a volatile organic chemical, to escape. It's a small molecule, and that goes on to form ozone in the presence of sunlight during the summer months. So we do have in our rule pretty stringent standards, and I can't speak to how these were developed, but state law basically says you can only release 25 tons of these pollutants per year. We went ahead and then made it a daily limitation back about 20 years ago. So it works out to be about 137 pounds per day. So there are some fluctuations. There's two events that occur in the winemaking operations that really contribute to the formation or the emission of ethanol. And those are the fermentation itself. Some use an open top. So it's all mixed up and it's fermented in an open barrel, indoors, of course. And then there are other areas where the storage of the wine itself, once it's in barrels, the barrels leak and emit a lot of ethanol. So depending on the number of barrels that are being stored, that's another emission point. And then, as I said, we have wastewater treatment plants at some of these facilities where they dump their spoils down, which contains a lot of wine and alcohol, and that ends up in the air as well once it hits the water. So the wine industry is basically making the argument, and when I say the wine industry, it's the Wine Institute, which is pretty much Gallo. They're making the claim that this is an artisan product, that it should not be regulated by those who do not know anything about winemaking, meaning air districts. And that's true. I like to drink wine, but and I'd like to make it too. But the point is here is that every time we talk to the Wine Institute, they bring up issues. Last year when they brought it to Anna Caballero to run a bill, they said it was a public health issue because the ethanol, if they were to extract that and capture it inside the building, it would be a public health hazard because that could contaminate the wine. Or so this is what they were saying. And we went on to explain that ethanol is actually used as a sterilizer, so we're not really sure what kind of public health impact. Could it change the wine? Perhaps, if you have a piece of equipment that never was there before in a room, it's electric motors, it could. But the new bill that it was under AB 17, 1714, thank you. And this is out of Yolo Solano Bay Area. Is basically that this now is a quality issue. So they wanted the Air District to make findings that regulating the wine and requiring controls, emission controls, was not going to have any kind of quality impact or taste impact on the wine. And as I say, I'll be the first in line to test wine and the flavor, but we have no ability to do that. That's sort of like the oil companies coming to us and saying, well, you can only regulate us if you can demonstrate that the mileage isn't impaired or the performance of the vehicle is not impaired by our new formulation. We already know that there are some industries, we have a vinegar manufacturing facility, which is the enemy of wine. You don't want to see that, those two things close together, but they actually regulate their product alcohol content by using control systems. Santa Barbara County APCD has required through a best available control technology analysis, they've demonstrated that controlling wine ethanol emissions is practicable and possible and cost effective at one of their wineries in Santa Barbara. So they led the pack, not us. And so in so doing, they sort of set the tone for the rest of the state. So we're just following suit that these large emitters should employ some sort of control technology to recover ethanol from the interior of the building or some process along the point of winemaking. There are many contractors out there that can help facilitate this. And we anticipate that as these technologies advance, they're gonna be coming down. Santa Barbara calculated that using this control technology was putting an additional 3 cents on a bottle of wine. So it is a pretty major capital outlay, but those costs are probably gonna be coming down soon. And for these guys that want to expand, the large guys, once again, they don't have very many options except for controlling their emissions. And the reason is we cannot turn a blind eye to these emissions. It's required statutorily in state law, in our rule. And that's federal and state law. So we can't just say, even if they were AB 1714 went forward, it's in conflict with federal law. And so it would blow up. So it's a problem, and we would like the wine industry to sit down and talk to us. We've offered to have a wine technology seminar and conference here. We'd like to take part in perhaps making this area a hub of innovation. And, you know, we don't get any response. I've talked to the Growers and Vintners Association in Monterey County. They're not even aware of usually what's going on with the Wine Institute. So it's very dicey for us, but by and large, we're not regulating most of the wine industry, just those large emitters. And by the way, the VOCs they emit are about 30% of our emissions inventory. That includes things like a power plant. So these are large operations. The one, Constellation Vineyards emits over 100 tons of VOCs per year. So they're a major source under federal law. So these are huge emitters. They should, if they want to expand and emit more, they're going to have to do something. The wine group has bought up a lot of our emission credits for VOCs. So they're controlling those now. So that does give them, their group, they could afford it, the chance to do some expansion. But the only other way is to find offset projects or to install controls, which we're still not convinced, and they have yet to show us that these will have an impact on the ability to make wine or impart flavor or some sort of quality impacts on the wine itself. So we're all open ears, and I think if you talk to most of the wine makers in this region, the large guys, they would say we're very easy to work with. We do have laws, though, that we have to uphold, but we really try to find ways to make things work for them, and I think we've been doing that time and time again. Where we can exempt processes that may have de minimis impacts, we will. So we've been bending over backwards, but quite honestly, we've tried to do a partnership, and we thought we were on the list to get notified of any legal making, exercise, and I heard about it at the 11th hour from our CAPCO's lobbyists. So it's rather unfortunate. We don't want to adversely impact the wine, either the quality or the the businesses here. We understand that. We just want to see them sort of grab this thing and maybe make it their own. And I would rather purchase, as far as quality, knowing that a wine is being responsible for its emissions rather than just trying to get absolved from any regulation. So I could speak to this a lot. I'm very invested in this, but I've met several times with all the players. Our staff has worked really closely. We look forward to giving you a sort of a breakdown of what occurs where with our winemaking operations. But they are a major player in the world of air quality. So
thank you very much, Rich. So we don't need a vote on this, but there may be other comments or even questions. Director Lopez.
So just by way of comments, obviously, while most bottles say Monterey on the label, the vast majority of the winemaking region and wine growing region is in my district in southern Monterey County. I think my biggest concern, and something I'd love to see us address in January, is the question of the playing field. Right, I know our policies are Monterey County specific or regionally specific to the oversight of this board, but what are our competitors? I want to know what Napa, Sonoma, Santa Rosa, Santa Barbara, and the other wine production regions are doing. If we're putting our industry if we're making a case study of them in any form, that's where I get a little uncomfortable, is those are jobs in my community that are at risk. As people look at expansion and they look away from us, that's a concern that I have. And so when we make that presentation in January, I hope that's something we can address. I understand that this was a bit of an end run, and I've been watching the Bills even last year when the last attempt was made. I understand the moving parts and who's actually behind them. But I think for me, whether it's a big company or a small company, it doesn't matter. Those are jobs in my community, and that's somebody going to work every single day. That's getting a paycheck, that's making a living. And so rather than seeing those grapes trucked to Santa Rosa, trucked to Napa, trucked to Santa Barbara, I would rather see that production occur in Monterey County and make sure that we have a level playing field. So that's where I'm coming from and wanting to get some additional information to make sure that we're well informed about the decisions we're making that impact this big critical local industry.
Well, I think your future presentation is quite timely. So it looks like we'll take this up, and it's a two-year bill, so it'll come back. And,
sure.
That's just good. Yep. Other comments? Sure.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to bring up. It became a two-year bill, but just looking at some of the history, I mean, it had, like, in the Assembly floor, it had bipartisan support. It was voted 71-0. And Cecilia Aguiar-Curry is the Assembly member that represents the Napa Valley. And so certainly, if there's a legislation that has bipartisan support and overwhelming bipartisan support, I just caution us when in opposition, when there's compromises to be made. But I think it's certainly trying to address an issue that legislators on both sides of the aisle are recognizing could be a severe hardship to a growing wine industry in our county, but certainly strong wine industries in other parts of the state.
If I just may add to that, this was overwhelmingly opposed by NGOs such as American Lung Association, Breathe California, the Sierra Club, and the list goes on and on. And so after this letter that I had, draft letter, that I had enclosed in the packet, actually is modeled after those letters. So it hit the fan in the parlance of the legislature, and a lot of people weren't having it. For those, it would set just unbelievable precedent that an industry could just try to get out of being regulated because of a quality issue. And once again, it goes to the matter. We've actually given Clean Air Awards to, I think it was Kendall Jackson, for their responsibility they took to address climate change emissions. And that's good press for them, and I think they really gobbled that up. But this is not good press for an industry, and there was a major blowback on the growers saying, well, what are you guys doing?
Well, I'm sure the items will continue to draw excitement. So thanks for bringing it to our attention. It's not required.
But they're asking for approval for something.
So it sounds like it's a two-year goal, so we don't need to take action. Mm-hmm. Okay, so unless there's any other questions or comments, public, anybody want to speak to this item? Okay, seeing none, we'll just go ahead and move on to the star item on our regular agenda today. And it's our AQ Trex program presentation. So With that, Mr. Frisbee.
Thank you, Chairman McShane, members of the board. My name is Dave Frisbee. I'm the planning and air monitoring manager here at the district, and I'm excited to introduce to you a new environmental education program to help bring environmental literacy to the area. This program is for middle and high school classrooms. It consists of a personal air monitor I have here. You can see there's no display on it. I'm going to hand this around so you can So this unit,
after the wine they see.
Where are those wipes at now? The breath of life.
My bad.
So this unit measures several pollutants, particulate, temperature, and carbon monoxide, CO2, among other pollutants. It's measures continuously. It has a locator in it, so it tells you the location you're at when the readings are taken. So that those measurements and that location is transmitted to a cell phone, so by Bluetooth, and you can see on the right your output for that measurement at that location. And so what this allows the students to do is to walk around with the unit carrying their cell phones and being able to visualize and see what the measurements are for each of those pollutants. And they can take a reading at various locations, and then that will record the measurements at that time and that particular spot. So this gives the advantage of the students going on a trek. They go around their community. They can see where there's higher pollutants measured or lower pollutants measured. And perhaps it's in an intersection or at the ballpark, wherever it is. So then they take that back to their classroom. They upload it onto the AQ Trex community webpage. This is out of Bakersfield. And you can see that the it's a graph, a map-based interface. They can see the measurements at a particular location. You can see the relatively higher concentrations of that pollutant by the differing colors. So the red is a higher concentration, the green's lowest. And then they can extract a chart out of the data as well. And they can compare this to students who have uploaded their data from all over the country. It's a low-cost system. We rent it. We don't own the equipment. We pay for a three-week rental, $360. The unit comes to us fully operational and calibrated because we want to make sure that we have trustworthy data. The program also provides a curriculum so that the instructors can adapt the curriculum to their own classes. Right now we have our first class that's signed up for it at Hartnell College. It's the environmental science class that they come to our air monitoring station every year in the fall. And so we accommodate them to give them a tour of the air monitoring station. And they'll have this AQ Trex for 3 weeks as well. The districts can provide outreach to the various school districts around the region. We provide the equipment rental, and we hired someone to do some training for us as well. And so if you're interested, after the program, we have a opportunity to do a trek with a meeting closed.
The air quality.
Wow!
Nobody opened that, right?
So you can all go around and accompany Bill. Malia here is going to take you around. He's got his phone set up so you can see how the equipment operates. And at the close of the meeting. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to entertain that.
Thank you very much. Does anybody have questions at this point in time about the AQ Trex?
Will school officials be able to monitor alcohol fumes or cannabis fumes?
No, I don't think we're measuring alcohol.
Well, Okay, anybody from the public wish to comment on this? Okay, bringing it back to us, I think at this point we have assistant action with the presentation, so no action is required. And so with that, I do hope that everyone can join for the demo. It won't take long, like 5-10 minutes. 5 minutes, so, and I don't think it'll be a Brown Act violation, right?
Yeah.
Of course. So there you go. All right. So with that, our next meeting is October 16th. Is there a motion to adjourn?
What city?
Moved by Director Lopez. Is there a second? Seconded by Director Hurst. All those in favor say aye.
How long you been on there?
All right. We are adjourned.
Thanks for your service there. Love all of you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, all right. Oh, you got a challenge.
Yeah, thank you.
Not scared.
Yeah.